Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet.
And I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on several acres out in the country.
We are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening, and we want others to love it, too.
Yes, we do, and we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode.
Hello, Dee.
Hey, Carol.
How's your summer?
We're in the middle of summer, and it's hot, but we're supposed to get some rain in Oklahoma tonight, which is not our norm, but that's okay. I'm all for it. I like rain.
So tell me what's going on in your garden this week.
So speaking of water and the lack thereof in the summertime, let's talk about the fact that we've got some watering and water and container conundrums. Boy, that's hard to say.
That is hard to say.
I water all my containers with drip irrigation. 90% of my, all of my garden is with drip irrigation. I have a little bit of watering in the front yard, but that's all. So here's the problem. If you have stuff watered on timers and on a system,
right?
If you don't check it periodically, animals walk around behind those containers, animals like my two cats, different other animals that come out at night, like raccoons, and they knock those little emitters out of your containers. And then you go outside to show your daughter this really pretty little morning flower that's yellow, because yellow is her favorite color. And you look over to your right and you say, oh, crap, that container is dry as a bone.
Yikes.
And I looked at it yesterday. So my point is, in Oklahoma, especially in the summertime, containers get really, really dry. Really, really fast. And so you need to check those, and you really need to check all of your watering system in the summer, because in another bed, I found where a timer had been turned off. I don't know why it's been turned off, but I put it back on automatic and I tested it and it worked just fine. But if I had left that for more than a day or two, yeah, not pretty, Carol.
No, and it sounds like you were watering your deck instead of the containers on the deck.
Yes, we were. We were watering the deck, which is never good because the deck is made out of wood. See, I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
Right. We should really reach out to your drip irrigation vendor, Dee, and ask if they want to sponsor this podcast, because you are a big proponent of drip irrigation.
There is no vendor. Oh, you mean the vendor who makes the lines that I
yes.
use, the Netafim?
Yes.
Yeah, we probably should. But Bill and Dee are the ones who put it together. We don't even use anybody anymore. But let's talk about something happy.
Yes.
I made a fabulous cucumber salad last night with my Sylor mini cucumbers. That is my favorite cucumber. It is small. It is prolific. And it mates with itself.
I need to grow that next year. So please do find a link to the seeds for those so that we can share that with the listeners.
No problem. I think that they came from Botanical Interests, our friends there.
Okay.
I think. But I will go check.
So out in my garden, I am finally starting to pick some regular big tomatoes. And
cool.
I'm picking them with the green shoulders, as we've discussed, and putting them out on the counter to finish ripening, because if I don't, I have noticed that the lower ones are getting bit by, I don't know, squirrels, chipmunks, raccoons, birds, you name it. I may be suburban, but it's like the wild, wild west out there. I was thinking, what was that? Wild Kingdom? That was the show. That's what I was thinking of.
Wild Kingdom.
So I've got a lot of cucumbers, but not one that I'm in love with. So I want to grow that one you're in love with. Squash, lots of good squash.
Yes.
Green beans. And I got to tell you, here's the down and dirty. That one variety is, I think it's bountiful, and I got to go verify. Too stringy. It's vining too much. Mm-hmm. And it is not coming. It's not invited back next year. It's not invited back.
I don't like either one of my green bean varieties this year either. I am going right back to Blue Lake 274 bush bean. I'm doing that next year, maybe even this fall. In fact, I might just pull out all of them and plant it because mine suck. I hate them.
Well, the Bountiful, if I'm very careful, and there is a string on each side of that bean, if I get that string off and then I cut them real small, I think they'll be okay to eat. But I found another variety. I think it's Plentiful. I found some old seeds.
Plentiful.
I planted those. Those are usually pretty good. So anyway.
You know what? I'm ready. Here's my thought on stringy green beans or flat fuzzy ones for that matter. Life is too short.
Exactly.
So I'm getting ready to yank all of mine up. They're vining too much, which I hate. It's really hard to find the green beans, which I hate. I need things that are easy because I'm too old to care about that stuff anymore.
Well, speaking of easy, I'll tell you what, I have a case of the midsummer gilts in the garden. Have you ever had these?
Uh-oh.
You've had these, haven't you?
I'm sure. I want to know why.
Well, because there's still at least a dozen bags of mulch sitting on the back patio that still needs to be spread around. And there are weeds growing, and I need to pull them out. And, you know,
weeds here too.
The cucumbers, I thought they were more bush variety. They're going across and blocking the path one way. And the figs are gigantic this year, and they're blocking another path. And I think, well, I'm going to get up at the crack of dawn and I'm going to head out there and before it gets hot. And then I get squirreling around inside. And so, as soon as it cools down.
I like that term, squirreling around. Yeah. I like that.
As soon as it cools down, Dee, I'm going out. But I always feel guilty if it's a nice day for gardening and I don't garden. And I got to get over that.
Me too. But, you know, life intercedes. I babysat my granddaughter this morning. Believe me, I would have maybe liked to be out there. But the garden can wait. Little granddaughters don't wait. And little nieces and nephews don't either. And so you have to do what works in your life. I did look up the Siler mini cucumbers, and I just want to correct something. It was John Sheeper's kitchen seeds.
Okay.
That I got those from. And the kitchen garden seeds. And the reason I want to say that is they sent them to me for free. I didn't know to buy these. And they are great little cucumbers. And I actually trellis them so that they don't crawl all over my garden.
We will put a link to those at John Sheeper's kitchen garden seeds. And I got to tell our listeners right now, Dee has changed locations in her house from which she records. And I don't know if she did this on purpose, but over her shoulder in her table, she has a wooden Sussex trug that is filled with tomatoes. And there are just a couple of tomatoes laid out on the table as though she has made this little still life for me to be envious of how many tomatoes she has.
Actually, no, I didn't even know they were there. I forgot they were there. That's funny. Because there's more up on the counter too, like tons more. I have so many tomatoes, especially the Roma type. But I used them in that salad I made, that cucumber salad. It was really good. I'll link to that too.
Okay.
So you want to do our quote? Because we have just wandered around in the garden today.
Yes. Here's the quote. At the heart of gardening is a belief in the miraculous. I don't know how she's Mirabelle Osler. She's
Mirabelle. Yeah.
Mirabelle. What'd you say? Mm-hmm.
Mirabelle. Yes. Mirabelle.
Mirabelle mm-hmm. Osler, English writer and garden designer. Her books.
Of course, I want her books now.
I have some of her books. I can turn
around. I don't. I thought we should say that over Carol's shoulder is her whole garden library that she can just access with one hand. Mine's in the living room, so I can't reach it. But I don't have any of Mirabelle's books, but they sounded really good.
Okay, I know I have some of her books, so that'll be our assignment, our little tease for next week. We will find more of her books, and we will tell our listeners about them.
Great. So what flower are we talking about today?
Well, today I thought we should talk about cannas.
Cannas. You know, some people don't like cannas. I don't really know why, but some people don't like them. Oh, wait, I do know why.
Why?
Because they used to plant them in the middle of roadways, you know, in that hill strip that's in the middle of the roadway. They used to plant cannas there, and then they always just look beat up by the wind and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of the canna blooms, unless we're talking about Cleopatra, which is a pretty bicolor. I like the cannas with the dark leaves. Do you grow any cannas?
So I usually buy 3 or 4 cannas at the greenhouse in the spring, and I buy them already sprouted. And usually they just have the basic green ones with either peach, red, or yellow flowers. And I think I bought a peach, a red, and a yellow. And then I just put them in a container so that there's something bulky in that container.
So next year I'm going to challenge you to buy Tropicana. Since you're just using them as tropicals anyway, and we should say that cannas are both subtropical and tropical varieties. So you can find both. Now, Tropicana is a more tropical variety, but it has these great striped leaves. And there's all different kinds of Tropicana, so you can get them with those same bloom colors. And they're just pretty. They're really pretty. I've grown those a lot in pots because I'm not trying to overwinter my pots, of course, most of them. But I have Australia and I think Wyoming down in my garden, and those are dark-leaved cannas. Don't quote me on Wyoming because I'm just saying that off the top of my head, but I know Australia is. Anyway, I just move them around now. Now, there are some friends of mine who would tell you that cannas run in their garden really bad. I have not seen that in the ones that are red, the dark red ones. I think some of the old green varieties do.
When they say run, I should tell the listeners in Indiana, ain't going to be a problem for you. Not going to be a problem. Yeah. They are not winter
hardy.
They're
not even going to live.
No.
Yeah.
In fact, my dad used to grow cannas out in the vegetable garden for decoration. But every fall in Indiana, you have to dig up the roots. And usually people wait until like the first frost. And then you the blacken and die, dig up those roots, then you got to clean them up, set them out, let them dry out a little bit, and then store them in a box or a bag, maybe with a little bit of, I don't know, wood shavings or something to absorb the moisture, and put them in a cool place, and then check them a couple of times during the winter, and then in the spring, you can plant them, you can pre-plant them inside, like in a black nursery pot or something, to prepare them to go back out to the garden.
There's no way. There's no way I would do all this for cannas.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I'll tell you, but though, that's because for you and I, it's easy to just go to a local greenhouse and buy cannas. Now, if I'm going to buy Tropicana, the one you challenged me, because it's so pretty, I would be tempted to buy it once and then save the roots over the winter.
Maybe. I mean, can you not find it there each spring?
No, because I really just shop one place. I mean, I could ask her, hey, are you going to get this? I should give her a
How
list
about you
in
just
the fall
ask
and
her.
Say, make sure you have all these for me next spring.
Yeah, I think she should. I think people would be wowed by Tropicana cannas up in Indianapolis. They've been sold here for a long time, and no, they don't overwinter. But the ones that I'm talking about, this is how you grow them in Oklahoma. You plant them in the ground, you give them some water, and then they just stay here forever. Not Tropicana, but all the dark-leaved ones or the green-leaved ones that I know about. There's nothing to growing them here. Nothing. You can grow them in clay. You can grow them in sand. Seriously, they're so easy, and they're subtropical, so they live here because we're Zone 7. Now
well,
who's in paradise?
The other thing, the ones that people like, I'll call them old-fashioned because they're just like green leaves, red flower.
Yeah.
And I've grown those. And here's the amazing thing. When you grow them out in the garden and you go to dig them up in the fall, you will be amazed how many roots you will dig up. You will have cannas to give to everybody in your family because they are very prolific. And so when you say they run, they don't run in Indiana, but they clump up pretty good. And you'll have way more than you first planted.
I guess I dug one of the dark ones out of my garden, and it ended up in the compost pile because I have a single canna growing in my compost pile, and it's so cute out there that I just have left it. But I'll probably have to dig it up this fall and put it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me. I have lettuce flowering in my compost pile that I've left. But anyway, one last thing about cannas here in Indiana. The Japanese beetles love the blooms.
Guess what loves cannas in Oklahoma? Grasshoppers love the leaves. So if you can find nolobate, which everybody locally is sold out of because I keep talking about it, and other people do too, not just me, and you have to order it online now. But if you order it, spray down your canna leaves and throw some of that wheat germ from the nolobate on there, and then they'll eat that instead of your cannas and your perennial hibiscus.
Huh. Good tip.
Thanks.
And so I just pick off the Japanese beetles and throw them on the ground and step on them.
Yeah.
When they fly away.
We don't have very many. I mean, Japanese beetles aren't a huge problem in Oklahoma. They are here, sort of. I've seen one over the years.
So here's my theory on why they're not a big problem in Oklahoma.
Okay.
So they lay their eggs in the grass, and if the ground is really hard, they can't get that egg down into the grass.
Oh, too bad.
Into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it doesn't live because they lay the egg in the ground and then it becomes a grub and the grub can destroy your lawn. But the summer of 2012, when we had a terrible, terrible drought.
When I visited.
The next several years, we had very little problem with Japanese beetles. And I think it's because they just could not get their eggs down into the ground.
Yeah,
the ground was too hard.
They couldn't reproduce. Yay. And so.
So that's why I think they won't be a big problem in Oklahoma. But I am not an entomologist.
No.
Or anything like that.
It's a good.
So don't believe me.
It's a really good theory, though. I like it.
So it kind of leads into our vegetable topic in a roundabout way, and I'll tell you how. You read the quote.
Don't judge each day by what you can pick, but by the seeds you sow. And that's Valerie Perrin in Fresh Water for Flowers, a book you just read.
I just read Fresh Water for Flowers. It is a French novel translated to English. And I will say that there's a lot of adultery.
Sure.
But the underlying story is very, it hooks you.
It's heartwarming.
And it's very heartwarming. And she lives by a cemetery. She's the cemetery keeper.
I love that. I might actually read it.
There's a little weaving of gardening through it, which I think is really wonderful. But anyway, I picked that quote from that book. So where's the tie-in? When you have fallow ground, which is like you've pulled out all your green beans, or in my place, I should throw out the spring kale, and you have nothing planted. Do you put a cover crop on? Do you leave it bare? What do you do?
If I'm being smart, I mulch it because fallow ground is a problem in the garden.
Yes, it's a problem because, number one, it won't be fallow for long. It'll be a weed pit.
Especially crabgrass. It grows here, too, not just where you live. It is crabgrass season in Oklahoma right now. And
same here.
Wow. I mean, even with mulch, it'll still come up, but it's a lot easier to pull up. And so one of the things I've got to do tomorrow is go out in my beds that face the street and pull out some of the crabgrass that got in there. And also, I found that in the back part is Johnson grass. I hate Johnson grass. I talked about it in my blog
this
week.
Johnson grass is horrible.
It's horrible. Mr. Yes. Johnson should have left that grass in the Mediterranean. That's what he should have done.
And we're gonna link to both of our blog posts for this week. We want to see about your mini meadow and your Johnson grass.
Ugh.
And also kind of explain to people why we disappeared from social media for a while. But that's another story.
That's another day.
Mm-hmm. So the fallow ground, and we hope maybe I've introduced a new word to people. Fallow means nothing planted on it.
Right.
It's a problem. So you should mulch it. I've sometimes, when I'm not being extremely lazy, bagged up the grass and leaf clippings from the lawn and put those on there, which helps quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also plant crops that are called cover crops, and some people call them green manure crops.
I have done this.
You can put those.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I've done this with annual ryegrass, for sure. But here's the thing in raised bed gardens, which we mostly have raised bed vegetable gardens.
Right.
The whole thing about the cover crop is you got to work it into the soil at some point.
Right.
And if you're not going to flip a rototiller onto your raised beds, so that means you're hand working it in, usually.
Yeah.
Hand digging it in.
Right.
That's a lot of work. So I'd say if you have what I'll call a traditional garden where you're rototilling, by all means, plant a cover crop, follow the instructions on the seed packet, whether it's annual ryegrass or red clover, or there's some mixes. You can use buckwheat, for example. Follow the directions on when to sow it so that it has time to mature before frost, and when to cut it down and till it in. Otherwise, you have a big mess on your hands.
Right. So in my case, because we both do raised beds. In fact, almost all my garden, well, the one in the back used to be raised beds, but over time they've kind of sunk down and it's not so much anymore, but it's all perennials. So I mulch it too. But my raised vegetable beds, I definitely mulch, but you know what? I missed mulching my cut garden. And so luckily the zinnias have kind of taken over and there's no room for weeds, but the sunflowers did not. And it's a weed haven. So I got to go on. You talked about your guilt. I have a little guilt too, because I have some bags of mulch that are outside my garden that need to be put in those beds. If you use raised beds, if you use grass clippings, those are excellent for mulch. Shredded leaves are excellent for mulch, although they will, you know, grow seeds. Or I use pine bark, shredded pine bark. Not the big chunks, the little shredded pieces.
Right, it's usually called pine bark mulch, mini pine bark mulch.
Right, and don't scratch it into the top of the soil. You just lay it right on top. The worms go up there, they decompose it, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So that's kind of how to take care of the vegetable garden. Because right now, I mean, things are going to start to peter out here in a little bit. And you got to decide if you have a big bunch of raised beds, you don't want to put all of them in fall crops because there's only so much kale a girl can eat.
Right. You do have time. If you start planting right about now, you do have time to plant more summer squash. If the squash bugs got yours, cover them like I did with the veg pod. That worked really well. Now the squash is so big, it's falling out of the veg pod. And then you could do bush beans. There's quite a few things. In fact, if you look at Oklahoma State's website, they have a PDF on what else you can grow in the fall garden that isn't just a fall crop.
Right. And here in the Midwest, we are starting to actually run out of time.
Right.
Because we could have... Our first frost date is October the 10th, and so if you figure September and August, that's like 30-plus days. So you got to look at that packet, and if it says 55 days from sowing to, it may be a little longer as the days get shorter. So I'd do it. I wouldn't go, here's what I would do in Indiana. I'd try it if I had leftover seed.
Sure, why not? If it's a short time crop.
If it's a short season crop. And also, you know, like, so I got a bunch of these Bountiful and the other variety is Black Valentine. I'm not in love with either one. So I might take those bean seeds and throw those out on the fallow areas because that's a nitrogen fixing plant.
Right.
If I get a few beans that I don't like, I don't care. And then I can just pull those out at the end of the season, but they will have done a little bit of good for the soil.
Right. Good plan. I love it.
So, here's the next quote. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
This is before the bookshelf. Those who dwell among the beauties and mysteries of the earth are never alone or weary of life. Rachel Carson.
And we love Rachel Carson. She was a great naturalist. Yes. And really raised the alarm about pesticides very, very early. And now she's considered somebody you should definitely read. But on the bookshelf, you have a book that I don't have. Again.
And it's called In Bloom, Growing, Harvesting, and Arranging Flowers by Claire Nolan. And she's a British author. You know, and in her bio at the beginning, she has a dog named Monty. Who do you think she named that dog after?
Monty Don. I know somebody who named their lawnmower Monty. But anyway, I digress.
I named my lawnmower Forest.
Oh, I like that. That's cute.
You know why I named it Forest?
No.
Because the scene in Forrest Gump where he just enjoys mowing
the grass. Oh, yeah. He mows and mows and mows. Yeah, that's right. I did not name my lawnmower people because I just get on it and mow.
Yeah. I got a real mower that's Little Forest, and then my regular mower is Forest. And then I got a mower that I don't like that I call Big Forest.
Oh, well, okay. So tell us about the book.
Back to this book. So this is a book about growing flowers, and she has annuals, perennials, bulbs, shrubs, trees. Growing these in order to have cut flowers.
Yep.
To bring into your house. And so what I really like about this book is First of all, even though she's British, I looked and she doesn't have the British spelling of things. So I think this must be an Americanized version. She always includes care for when the flower is in the vase. So she tells you at what stage to cut the flower to put it in the vase. And if there's any special care for it in the vase.
Nice.
Which I think makes this very valuable. And the other thing is she has a whole bunch of great information for people like me who are not natural flower arrangers.
Right. I did a whole talk.
And so she shows.
And remember when I remember back before COVID and I did all those talks at the garden show? I did two on flower arranging.
Right. And so this, she just really has some great ideas. And I'm telling you, the photographs are wonderful. So this has been sitting on my shelf for a year. I don't know why I didn't look at it before now. It might have changed some of the things I did that I chose to plant in the garden. But I really liked it. And you know what else I did?
What?
So she's like a, I don't want to say she's what they call a lifestyle editor.
What does that mean?
Or was a lifestyle editor. Well, she used to, so her other book is called Making a House Your Home.
Oh, I like that.
And it's about decorating and organizing tips and things like that. And it was published in 2011. This book's from 2019. It's out of print. And I might have bought a used copy of it.
That's okay. You bought Making a House Your Home as a used copy?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I already have In Bloom.
Yeah.
In Bloom just came out last year. So anyway, it's very good. And I, so, you know, sometimes we review books and like, I don't have room for it. I'm getting rid of it. This one, I definitely have room for it. It's a keeper.
That's nice. I was also going to say, you know, that talk I did was on grocery store bouquets and how to arrange them in vases so that they look natural and you can enjoy them. So I think her book would be good for people who don't necessarily want to grow all those plants, but maybe they're just buying a grocery store bouquet. She still tells you how to take care of them and also how to arrange them and how to get the most water uptake to the flowers. I think that that's really useful.
Right. And it's, you know, she's got like talks about vases, about keeping it simple. But yeah, you could look up the flower that you buy at the grocery store and it would tell you, you know, is that grocery store one picked at a good stage or is it just picked too late and it's only going to last a day if you kind of follow that advice.
Right, like buying roses when they aren't open and stuff like that. You know, when they're just starting to open. Don't buy them completely closed because they may never open. All right, well, that sounds wonderful. And that kind of takes us into our dirt.
Exactly. So a couple of weeks ago, the big deal on CBS Sunday Morning is guess who showed up? I haven't seen her in a while.
Martha Stewart, she's been on CBS Sunday Morning at least two times this year, but the first time she was talking about baking or cooking, and this time she's talking about gardening. I know Martha is a controversial figure for so many reasons, one of which is she's a super perfectionist.
Exactly. And she's got more money than anybody.
More money than God. So, but this was really fun. If you just take it, and we're going to link to it, this little video, it was so much fun to watch, but just take it with a grain of salt because she literally gets into like a gator and then drives over to her secret garden. She has to drive to it, people.
Exactly.
That's a big garden.
She has an enormous garden, and I don't know if it's the segment we leaked to, but there were actually like two segments.
Yes.
And there was one where they were planting something, but it's Martha standing there like in white pants and nice blouse, and then the planting was actually done by her gardener.
Right, right. And she always did that on her show, too. I always wished that I had a gardener to help me plant, but actually, I have a friend who does come help me plant sometimes now, but that doesn't make me Martha. I'm not that particular.
You know what that planting method is called, don't you?
I can't wait to hear what word you've made up today. What?
No, it's not a word. It's a phrase. That's called point and tell the man where to plant.
I thought you were going to make it Latin. Like pointus plantus or something.
No, I wasn't going to do anything like that. Anyway, it's nice, and we're thrilled that gardening is such a big thing, I guess, this year because of COVID and everything else. And we hope that people will continue to garden into the fall and into next year and that it becomes a lifelong habit.
Right. I hope it does because I think it is something that will reward you. And that's what all of our quotes were about this week, too, because we get emails a lot from people who say, thank you for being a bright spot in my day. And you just don't know how much that touches our hearts.
It does. And so we want to thank everyone for listening to The Garden Angelist. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us.
And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love a review. That helps us get noticed by others. Plus, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode.
Right. And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
It was so lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye.